I'd like to call a meeting to order here, the Commerce and Labor Committee, and if you know who's here. Representative Johnson, have you taken a thorough look at the minutes? And
I'd like to move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Johnson has reviewed the minutes and is moving them. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes approved. We have Chair Atkins here with House File 2818. Do you want to move your bill, sir?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that House File 2811 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety, I think is the next stop we're going to make. And with that, Mr. Chair, this is a, I believe, no offense to my friend next to me, but the most boring bill that I've carried in the time that I've been in the legislature. There's no controversy at all. I searched for some and I couldn't come up with anything. There is literally everybody agrees on it. The board, the Minnesota CPAs have all come together on working through this. I do have a testifier here that would like to give. Oh my heavens! Give me that. Give me that. You are not going to say all this, but he'll see. He'll limit his comments to a minute or two, and then we'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns you may have.
Before we proceed, Chair Atkins, do you have an amendment that you'd like to move?
Or I do. In fact, the
we'll get it.
That is the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'd move that at this time to put in the shape that we'd like to proceed with it.
Okay. Everybody have the A1 amendment and had an opportunity to look at it? Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. We have our 28-11. Sorry about that. The first time I called it 18. But we have the bill before us and I'd like to hear from your testifier.
This is Mr. Hyde.
Thank you. My name is Robert Hyde. I live in Plymouth, Minnesota, and I've been a CPA in public practice in Minnesota for 36 years. I've been on the State Board of Accountancy for 9 years, and while on the board, I have served as chair for 5 years, and I am currently serving as chair of the board's Rules and Legislation Committee. In that role, I would ask, on behalf of the Board of Accountancy, for your support for this legislation. As Representative Atkins said before, this legislation has been in development since March of 2007, and we believe that we have proposed legislation which modernizes the accountancy statute in Minnesota. When the board last appeared before the legislature 8 years ago, it adopted the provisions of the Uniform Accountancy Act, and we're back today to update that legislation for changes that have been made in the Uniform Accountancy Act over that period of time. So in an effort to meet Representative Atkins' goals of being brief, I would just ask for your support for this legislation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hyde. Any questions for Mr. Hyde or the author of the bill? Representative Barron.
I was going to defer to Representative Mahoney. He had his hand up first, but if he's okay, I'll ask a question. There's a number of powers, including a subpoena power, in this bill. What do similar licensing boards have as far as powers? And I'd be referring to primarily the health licensing boards, who have the same core mission as you do, which is basically to protect the public.
Mr. Chair, Representative, based on my understanding and talking with our legal counsel at the governor's office, these are very similar powers, and they were the subpoena powers that are there today were those put in back in 2000 and were actually there before even that time. But they're very similar to other boards, as best as I can recollect at the time. There's nothing new with respect to subpoena powers in this legislation.
Representative Burns?
Thank you.
Okay, good. Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the author or for the testifier. On page 27, I didn't get a chance to read the full bill. I generally trust the Representative Atkins, but I was just paging through it. And you've got, you're giving an exemption here for on education for the purposes of this paragraph. any person who passes the uniform CPA is exempt from further education requirements? Am I reading that right, or did I miss something there?
Hopefully you missed something. That is not correct. The particular section that you're dealing about is really the section dealing with our substantial equivalency. You may be probably taking that out of context, but our CPA statutes do require continuing education. They require 120 years every 3 years.
120 hours.
And 120 hours every 3 years.
120 years.
Okay, we require a lot.
Really well educated CPA.
Probably better educated than attorneys, but.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah, so that is the requirement, and it continues to be that representative.
And, Mr. Chair, so, and that. This section actually has got a bunch of stuff about reciprocity and moving from one state to the other. A CPA from Wisconsin moving to Minnesota would then actually be covered under Minnesota requirements of 40
hours. Correct. What this particular section representative, what this particular section does talk about is not necessarily the Wisconsin people that are moving to Minnesota. It's Wisconsin people that continue to be based in Wisconsin that may come here on a periodic occasion to service a client or a business at their request.
Any further questions? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd renew my motion that House File 2811 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Hyde. Next on the agenda is 2898, Representative Paymar, if you want to come forward. And
Representative Paymar, welcome to the committee. The chair will move House File 2898 be recommended passed and referred to the House floor.
Welcome aboard. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commerce Committee. Some of you have heard the parts of this bill before, or at least the story before. I'll just take a couple of minutes of your time. House File 2898 arises from an incident involving a constituent of mine, Toby Pearson, and his family. In August of 2003, there was a plane crash in Grand Marais. The pilot, Charlie Erickson, and passenger Catherine Pearson died in that crash, and the two girls, Grace, then 4 years old, and Lily, then 3 years old, both survived that horrible accident. Toby, Catherine, Grace, and Lily all lived in Duluth at the time of the crash. The girls had extensive medical injuries, with Grace spending approximately 3 weeks and Lily spending 8 weeks in various hospitals. And when the girls emerged from the hospitals and the medical bills started arriving, the family was informed that the airplane insurance company was denying coverage. And this started more than 3 years of litigation between the family and the insurance company. And finally, after more than 3 years, the parties entered into agreement. At the end of the last session, we passed a bill which created a working group and an aviation insurance meet and confer group. And you have a copy of that report, you should, in your packet. I think it was passed out. And the group met several times and was comprised of the Pilots Association, pilots' representatives, and various representatives of the insurance industry. If you look at page 3 of your report, you'll see who attended those meetings. The bill language that is in front of us today, in front of you today, is a compromise that evolved from those meetings. Passing this bill in this form seeks to get the pilots what they pay for when they purchase insurance, and narrows but does not eliminate the likelihood of another innocent third-party victim having to suffer through the chaos and the struggles that the Pearsons had to experience. This bill is very straightforward. It seeks to establish in Minnesota statute that in order for the insurance company to deny a claim, there must be a direct causal connection to the loss. Essentially, what this means is that when there is a crash, in order for the insurance company to deny the claim, the insured pilot's actions or failure to act must have a direct causal connection to the loss. This law has been in effect in other states, and I have with me today my constituent, Toby Pearson, whose family was affected by this whole incident, and would like to, if you would indulge him, to speak to the bill for a few moments.
Thank you, Representative Tamar. Go ahead when you're ready, Mr. Pearson. And
thank you.
You've been here before, so
yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Toby Pearson. I'm the father of Grace and Lily Pearson, and I was married to Catherine Pearson at the time of the crash. Representative Tamar kind of walked through the long story. We don't need to necessarily stick on the incident any longer. I think the important part that came out of this is that last year, as we had a bill that was moving forward, there were some parties that came to the table that we thought we should meet and confer over the summer and see if we can't find a compromise that benefits all parties involved. This bill is a compromise which arose from that meet and confer group. As Representative Paymar said, I participated along with the pilots. There were representatives of various insurance companies, and it was chaired by Representative Mike Beard. The report that you have is kind of the summary of all of our meetings, all of the interests of the parties that were displayed at those meetings. And the direct cause language is basically a compromise. It's seeking to balance the interests of the insurers to protect themselves against bad actors, and also to ensure that the pilots get what they pay for when they take out a policy, and to try to further protect innocent third parties. In my case, they were the 3 and 4-year-old girls, Grace and Lily. I think everybody involved in the process realized that it was an educational process for all of us, and that we all, I think, came up with a better bill in the end in this form that is the compromise that we were looking for. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Mr. Chair, I have one more witness who wants to make a brief statement, John Kavanaugh from the Pilots Association.
Mr. Chair, members,
I'm John Kavanaugh. I'm with Cook Hill Gerard Associates, and we represent the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, otherwise known as AOPA. AOPA participated in the Aviation Insurance Meet and Confer Group and is supportive of the final outcome, House File 2898. Although not all members of the Meet and Confer Group are in full agreement with the bill, AOPA believes the language represents a compromise that balances the rights of injured third parties and the fears of aviation insurers and aviation insurance policy holders that premiums will become unaffordable. In respect to the committee's time, I will stand for questions.
Great, thank you, sir. Any questions for the testifiers or the author of the bill? Any final words by the author? Sometimes
no,
silence
no,
is good.
No, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate the committee's support.
Okay. Chair Atkins renews his motion then that House File 2898 be recommended to pass and sent to the House floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Bill passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up is House File 2553, Victims Compensation Fund, specifically the issue of subrogation. The chair will move House File 2553 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. Is Representative Winkler with us yet? Ah, Representative Winkler is a popular fellow. I'm told by my phone, a friend to my left, that he's actually presenting a bill as we speak in a nearby committee. Where's the transportation? What we'll do is there's a couple of amendments in your packet. We'll take about a 5-minute recess or so until Representative Winkler is available. But I wanted to alert you that there's a couple of amendments available for you to take a look at. And as soon as Representative Winkler is ready to go, we'll call the meeting back to order.
Yeah, you did.
So much for your taxes, they're going to screw that up now.
There used to be teachers, now they're gone.
This is Zellerman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Can I ask your question?
Tell my wife that. She thinks I'm looking for a job.
How do you know?
Well, thanks.
What was that?
Thank you. Well, my uncle, I was really close with my cousin's owner in Lake Elmo, and my uncle worked at Whirlpool in about mid-80s, you know, he left. He just had got to Kentucky, and he just came down here.
Hey, but you're looking at empty nesting pretty soon. You ought to be cheering.
Great. I can see that.
Don't bring that up.
Nope, I'm all done. Oh, okay. Way too early.
That's the only way it works in a bipartisan state, with all the Democrats and the states and the retiring Republicans.
I don't
know. We have to do it. That's right.
Would that be helpful to have somebody from the
Bank for Death? What's the past at 96 or 97?
Yeah, nobody's
in the program. Your district is vice matter, but when our county is the minister, it's on our state and our God and our ministry. They're making a 60 grand a year already. Yeah. You know it's bad.
We're making the
watches. Some do, and I some do. That's why I went with that license. Yeah, right.
I'm going to go to the restroom.
Missing anybody? All right. Folks, we'll call the meeting back to order. The next file up is House File 2553. The chair will move House File. I think I did this, but just so that Representative Winkler hears it, we'll move that House File 2553 be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. Representative Winkler, I will look forward to hearing your comments. I just wanted to make sure for the benefit of the members of the committee and those folks that are here, the sole issue before us in this committee over which we have purview is the issue of subrogation. For lay folks that may not be familiar with that, it's kind of a technical term for saying certain companies have a right of reimbursement. And in this instance, with respect to the 35W Victims Compensation Fund that's being considered, there's a number of insurance companies and other entities, self-insured funds and the like, that have paid medical bills on behalf of injury victims and their families. Under certain laws, they would be entitled to make a recovery against any proceeds that those victims might well be entitled to. So, for example, if a certain family were paid $100,000 and they had incurred $50,000 in medical bills, it's conceivable that an insurance company or some other similarly situated fund might be able to come in, take that first $50,000 that would be paid to that family. Frankly, if the medical bills were higher than that, they could take all of the money, conceivably before the victim would get any of the money at all. And before the legislature was asked to vote upon this, we wanted to make sure that we vetted that issue so that legislators and folks interested in the bill could approach it with their eyes wide open on what, I don't know what the final amount will be if there is one that, and if this bill moves forward. But so that we know where those funds are going and whether they are ending up in the hands of the intended parties, or perhaps they're ending up in the hands of other folks. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Representative Winkler. I'll take it back after that because there are some parties here that have already represented what their interests are or what their point of view is, and I'll share those with the members of the committee. Representative Winkler, perhaps you can give us a brief overview of the bill, and then in particular with respect to any language or position you may have with regard to subrogation issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my apologies for being late. I was presenting another bill in another committee and was held hostage by the chair and members over there.
We'll be sure to let that chair know.
That's up to you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. We're all familiar with the August 1st bridge collapse on I-35W. Most of us, I think, are pretty well familiar with the stories that we've heard. In addition to injuries and lost loved ones, survivors are dealing with lost wages and medical expenses, disability from the time since August 1st, and potentially future disability affecting their ability to provide for their families. The state has a liability cap system in place today, which is $1 million for a single incident, and under that $1 million, an individual can receive up to $300,000 if they successfully sue the state, in addition to the various procedural roadblocks the state has in place as part of its history of sovereign immunity. So it's important to note at the outset that if we do nothing, if the state of Minnesota does not respond, the individuals who were on the bridge would receive under that scenario approximately $6,000 each for, in some cases, medical bills that can be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars just for that alone. My point of view is that this is a state responsibility to deal with this issue, to deal with these survivors in the same way that it was the state's responsibility to design, build, maintain, and inspect this critical piece of public infrastructure. The bill is structured in two sections. Article 1 is a general provision providing for a concept in law of a catastrophe survivor compensation fund. Section 2 is specific to 35W. And I would, it's important to understand that the general provision of law for a survivor compensation fund would only ever be enacted in the future if the legislature and the governor make a finding that a catastrophe has occurred and that funds should be made available to compensate these individuals. So the concept is there should, in the unlikely event that we have a similar kind of incident occur again in Minnesota. And that's crucial. And this isn't directly before your committee, but we had a September 11th special session to deal with flooding in southeastern Minnesota. We passed an aid package, which was similar in many ways to what we've passed before because we've done it before. We were used to, in one way or another, dealing with natural disasters. We were not accustomed to dealing with this kind of situation. This bill is the first of its kind in the state that I'm aware of, and it's because it's an unprecedented and highly unusual situation. So putting this concept in law helps us, I think, be prepared should something like this happen in the future. A few key points. In Article 1, the compensation fund would not provide for any kind of punitive damages paid out by the state, nor would it pay attorney fees for individuals applying to the fund. The fund would be administered by a third-party special master who would be appointed by the executive council of the state, which is the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, and state auditor. There would be a reporting function to the attorney general that the special master would do, just reporting expenses. There has been discussion about possibly expanding that reporting to include the legislature, but that hasn't been done. There's a 1% cap on the administrative expenses of the fund so that the special master couldn't spend more than 1% of the total fund amount in distributing the money. There is not a date yet in the bill by a time by which they need the survivors need to apply for funds, but there is a time limit on everything else, and that will be inserted based on when we have a better idea of when the bill will pass, presuming it does. So there will be a date. The executive council will have 30 days to appoint a special master. The special master then would have 120 days after receiving the application from the survivor to respond to the proposed award package, and then the survivor, not award, but compensation package, and the survivor then would have 30 days to decide whether to accept that compensation. If they decide to accept, they would then sign a release and agree not to sue the state of Minnesota based on this incident. For the lawyers in the crowd, it's a Perringer-style release, which will ensure that there is not a double recovery by the survivor. Another key point here is that the state is really only trying to fill the gap. So we will look at the total medical expenses paid by other sources, disability, any other kind of private insurance or other source of funds, and say what is left financially for you that you're bearing. Is it, you know, whether it's future disability, medical expenses, wage loss, or simple pain and suffering, which the tort system addresses every day. I'll come back to the subrogation pieces. There's a data practices section about public information. Another key point is that there is no admission of liability by the state. This does not invoke the state's liability cap. It doesn't affect them. It is silent on that issue. It leaves the current liability cap system in place, which we can have a separate debate about that, but by and large, that system works for the state of Minnesota. This is a highly unusual event, and I think it's bad public policy for us to try to change the entire state liability cap system because of this one highly unusual event. So this is truly a one-off kind of response to this event. And so that ties back to the fact that this is not in any way the state's admission of any kind of legal liability in the technical sense. The fund could receive gifts from third parties. Article 2 is specific to 35W. It starts with a legislative finding that this event that occurred rises to a level that this compensation fund structure should be invoked. So that would be the first step that any future legislature would have to take to invoke this fund again. Again, it's 30 days to appoint a special master, and it states in the definition section under survivor that you had to have been on the bridge to receive benefits. You couldn't have been three blocks away and emotionally scarred and applied for funds. You had to be on the bridge. So there is that proximate requirement. Section 2 under Article 2 specifies that the emergency relief payments that were created last fall will cease once this program is in place. And those were, just in, if you're not well familiar with it, it stated under that policy that you could receive up to $20,000 specifically for lost wages that resulted from a physical injury. So it was pretty narrow and a small amount, and it was kind of similar to a workers' comp type of thing. So it really doesn't address the broader concerns that people have. Finally, in Section 3, there's an appropriation of $750,000 to Waite House, which is the community center that the kids on the school bus were based out of in their field trips that they were taking. That Waite House Community Center has really become, and was and is, a hub of support for the families that were affected by this collapse. And they have a three-year business plan, basically, to provide the kind of centralized support and advocacy services for the kids on the bus, about 60 of them, many of whom are now falling behind in school, kind of off the leadership track that they once were on. And Waite House has been a place where they have been involved, their families have been involved, and in one family it was five children who had kids on that bus, ranging in age. So it really is kind of a center for those families. And that's the bill in broad sense. There is a subrogation section in Article 1 under, just a second here, I believe it's page 4, subdivision 5, subdivision 6, subdivision 7 really deals with the issues of third-party indemnification and subrogation. The bill currently has language stating in simple terms that the money paid out of the fund would not be subject to a subrogation interest. That's the bill, in brief.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. And before we call for testimony, I did have an opportunity, the author was present as well, to visit with Blue Cross Blue Shield Medica Health Partners representative for the Council of Health Plans yesterday. It was my understanding as well that Preferred One's interests were similar. And rather than have all of those folks come up and testify as to whether or not they seek to subrogate, seek to get reimbursed for medical bills that they have paid, they authorized me to state at the outset of this hearing that they do not intend to pursue that right of subrogation on behalf of their plans. There was one caveat, of course, which is that they are merely the administrator for certain self-insured plans. So, for example, if Tui, Pugh, Rogaszewski, and Atkins Law Firm self-insured our own plan, we might hire a Blue Cross Blue Shield or a Preferred One to act as our administrator to pay out those claims. And none of those big four can speak for those self-insured plans. But on behalf of themselves, all of the state-regulated plans, they have already indicated to myself, the author, and our staff that they do not intend to pursue a subrogation interest. And I would ask them at this time, if they disagree with that, now is your time to charge down to the podium and tell the chair that he's full of it. But otherwise, we will operate with that understanding and save everybody.
Can we do that?
Well, no, members are not allowed to say that. That's only for real people. Yeah, that's why I waited for him to leave before I said that. And with that, it's also further my understanding that certain PNC carriers, like Farmers, have already taken a position publicly that they do not intend to subrogate. I believe there have been others that have said similar things, either privately or semi-publicly or to the representatives. The whole point of this hearing is to make sure that those funds, if there are funds that are allocated, end up in the families or in the hands of the families and those victims of the 35W tragedy. There is an amendment that is before you, the A7 amendment, and then there's also an A8 amendment. My suggestion would be that we, with the author's acceptance and that of the committee, that we add those amendments, that we then take whatever testimony there may be, and then act on the bill. The A7 amendment, I appreciate Mr. Pender's help with this. I visited with the author about it. The representative for the victims has had a chance to review it. I also visited with Representative Zellers earlier. There's a couple minor changes to it, and then I will offer it. The first change is on line 1.8 of the A7 amendment, and that you'll see the reference to 620.01. That should be 62Q.01.
The second change is on the second page, beginning on line 2.7 through 2.11, starting with the word if and going through the word victim. Those two sentences are deleted. So again, it's the second if on line 2.7 that begins with, if a notice of claim is received, comma, the fund shall remain in escrow, and continuing on through the word victim. Those two sentences are deleted as well. And with that, I would offer the A7 amendment. The point of this amendment, very briefly, is that with the help of Mr. Pender, we have identified the various possible entities that could assert a subrogation claim, and have indicated that they would not be eligible for, and essentially it's just the various state-regulated plans. I believe that the four that we spoke with yesterday represent somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% or 80% of those that are covered by health plans in Minnesota. The portion that would apply to those self-insured plans begins on line 2.3 and goes through line 2.7. I'm going through this a little bit more than we go through normal amendments because there's a little bit more meat on these bones. But what this one does is that it says, following an award to a victim by a special master, which is what the bill calls for, any entity claiming a subrogation interest against the award shall have 60 days in which to provide notice to the state and to the victim of its intent to assert its interest, during which time the award shall remain in the possession of the state. Failure to provide notice shall result in a waiver of the subrogation claim, and then if no notice is received, then the funds are released. The concern there is that to the extent that the funds were to be released to one of the families, the victims, once those funds come into their possession, if there's a successful subrogation right that's asserted, they literally could take every dollar of that to satisfy the claim. The goal here is to find out if, in fact, there is any subrogation interest that's being asserted. If none is asserted, they waive that right, and we know that all of those funds are going to end up in the hands of those families. It does add 60 days, but that seemed like an appropriate period of time to find out if in fact, all of those funds are going to be sought by some other entity or not. Again, with that, I will offer that amendment. I'd be happy to stand for any questions or concerns that people may have, however. All right, seeing none, and all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That passes. Representative Zellers, you have an A8 amendment. We didn't finalize whether you intended to offer that here or at the next committee stop.
Yeah, thank you.
It's fine with us.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in speaking with Representative Winkler, being that it's a finance-related, the amendment probably best fits in the finance. Representative Winkler and I and Steele Forrest and actually Anderson are all on that committee, so I think we probably have it covered either way.
Would you like the rest of us to join you? I mean, we're just portable committees.
But Chair Kahn would love an extra group, and the more the merrier. In speaking with Representative Winkler, he preferred to add it on at that time in the committee, and I know he's talked about it in other committees, and it just seems like the right thing to do to make sure that we're keeping the funds to the victims that we're intending. So I'll withdraw the amendment and present it to Representative Kahn or Chair Kahn's committee.
Okay, fair enough. With that, we have the bill as amended before the committee. Is there anyone that desires to be heard with respect to the bill at this time? Representative Winkler, then I do have one request of you, which I know I gave you all a 24 hours notice on it yesterday, so I didn't expect that you'd have it before us today. But if you, working with the representatives of the victims and the victims' families, can identify those that are self-insured, and I know of one, for example, that is in the neighborhood of about its self-insured plan. They've paid in the neighborhood of $800,000 or more in medical bills already, and ascertain to the best degree you can whether or not they intend to pursue their subrogation interest. It seems to me that would be important for legislators to know before we vote on it on the House floor. And I know this is on a rapid trajectory, but to the extent that can be ascertained so that when 134 people get together to vote on this, we have a sense of where the money's going, then I'd be comfortable with passing it out of this committee and continuing on your quest to visit virtually every committee in the House before you get to the House floor. But with that, I think the final word then would be, I'm sure that I speak on behalf of all of the members of this committee, and we see a number of folks that I suspect are related to the families and their representative. Our hearts go out to you. We'll keep you in our thoughts and in our prayers. We wish you the very best. We hope that we have provided some little bit of help in our efforts today that can't possibly replace what you've already suffered through, but we do the best we can as Minnesotans looking out from our families to yours. With that, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2553 be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on Finance as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Winkler, thank you very much, and thank you for everyone that's in attendance today.
Mr. Chair, members.
That we stand adjourned.